Hey, it's Trey from Omega
Trey.
Star Set.
What are you doing in my podcasting room?
I'm recording the intro.
Intro for what?
For the indie podcaster.
Get out of my room!
Oh, come on.
Get out!
Oh, okay.
This is Slip from Omega Star 7. Thank you for joining Jeff, aka the podcast father, on his journey, sharing great things content creators are doing. He's the indie podcaster. How was that?
I mean, I think I did it better, but...
You've been searching for a podcast. Want to know about some great artists?
Yeah.
You've come to the right place. Indie Podcaster, with your host, the podcast father.
Oh, hell yeah. It's time for Indie Podcaster. I'm Jeff, and today I'm going to be joined by my really good friend, Greg, from Indie Drop-In. But before we get into that conversation, I hope everybody's having a hell of a week. Greg, are you creeping in on this conversation?
I'm going to try to creep in. I mean, we'll see how it goes.
How's your week been, man?
It's been busy. It's been a crazy week. You know, we're trying to get this podcast garage thing started. So I've been dealing with the website, and Indie Drop-In is busier than ever. Plus, you know, the day job.
Yeah. And you do that in your underwear, right?
Most of the time.
I wish I could. That sounds like an amazing thing. Never have to put on pants even.
Yeah. It's been a while since I wore pants.
There's no need. Yeah. Yeah. Let's just shovel in snow. I hope you weren't wearing those shorts out shoveling the snow.
Oh, I did have to put on pants for that. But the second time around, I tracked down some kids walking down my street and I said, hey, you guys want to make some money shoveling? And they did. So my laziness wins out.
They weren't around my house. Damn, you see how it drifted? Like from my garage, like within that 10 feet, it was like 3.5 feet deep.
Yeah.
No kids in my neighborhood coming by. My God, I shoveled for days, man.
Dude, that's because they're smarter than us. They looked out the window and went, nah.
Yeah, well.
You have to do it. They don't.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah, I had to do it if I wanted to ever be able to leave in case of a dire emergency even. I didn't want to do it, though. Anyway, man, I'm super happy to chat with you today. And we've been, like you said, working on this podcast garage thing. If we ever get that website done. I'm just kidding. I'm much slower everything than you.
Yeah, no, I'm taking my sweet time, that's for sure.
Yeah, we'll get this going eventually, so everybody look forward to that. But today is going to be a little bit about you.
Ooh.
But before we get into that, I'm going to take care of a few housekeeping things. Seriously, this podcast would not exist if it wasn't for the awesome love that you guys show me in the content creator community. If you're not in contact with me and you would like to be, or you'd like to be featured on this podcast, you can go about this in a couple different ways. If you just want to chat with me, hit me up on Twitter at @podcast_father. Hit up my website, podcastfather.com. There you will also find a form that you can fill out to be featured on this very podcast. If you really love what I'm doing, you know, I just would love it if you subscribe to this podcast. If you'd hit up some of the Patreon, Buy Me a Coffee, PayPal options at podcastfather.com, you can leave me a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. I'd be thankful. I'd love you. I'd appreciate it. I'm going to share some sponsors with you. They do help me keep making this podcast, but more importantly, these are great tools that independent podcasters should be using. PodPage. You can build a beautiful podcast website literally in less than 5 minutes, guys. It's amazing. It uses your RSS feed and it automatically creates all of this. You can customize it and do all the different things you want to do. There's all sorts of different packages. You've got to have a website if you're a podcaster or a content creator. You have to go to podpage.com, use my code FATHER. This will get you $20 off any pro package. One of the big challenges for new podcasters is marketing your podcast. Do you need help doing that? Well, I've got the solution for you. My friends at PodSpike make marketing your podcast easy, affordable, and effective. They work with you. They pull the legwork. They connect you with all these different resources that you get to choose from. Go to podspike.com, use the code IndiePodcaster. You'll get $20 off your first month of a pro membership. As a podcaster, it's very important to make sure you got a transcript going on for all your episodes. It really is. And my friends at Podden have the ultimate tools to do that. Make your podcast an eye-catching transcript with ease. You really need to get to it. Go to podden.io. All right, let's get into this conversation, which happens to be powered by Riverside.fm. Greg, you are a legend. You are the man that has built an awesome network. But you've been podcasting for what about, let's call it content creation, 10 years now?
At least, yeah.
At least, wow.
Mm-hmm.
How did it all get started, man? But you call this the why, right? Not the how. We always talk about podcasting, like yeah. Tanner and I's podcast. You say mine's more of the why, his is the how.
Yeah, I mean, content creation has always been a part of my day job, fortunately or unfortunately. I'm in technology. So even before there was a thing called influencers, there were tech blogs. And I would have to write tech blogs and, you know, make videos for the companies that I worked for. So it's kind of always been in my life. And then 6 or 7 years ago, I started getting into YouTube pretty heavily. And I started a YouTube channel that had to do with car audio, which I really liked. And then I realized it's a lot of work to go out and film stuff in the heat and travel to go to these shows. And I just thought, it's more of a hobby. And then my longest running one is called Greg Reviews Sci-Fi, which I still do periodically. It's on pause right now because I'm spending most of my time on Indie Drop-In. But that's kind of like my hobby. I love sci-fi and everything to do with sci-fi. So I was just trying to find a way where I could kind of contribute and not feel like I was just wasting all my time reading science fiction.
It's a big thing in your house. Like, your wife is doing this as well. So, like, I don't know if we're allowed to mention that or not, but this is a big thing in your house.
Yeah. So my wife and I, 2 years ago, we started a podcast called Fan Dummies. And we actually started with a friend of ours, but it ended up being just her and I. And it ran for a little over 2 years. It got decent size. I mean, our average downloads per episode were anywhere between 10,000 and 14,000, I think, is our best episode. So it wasn't a slow show. It wasn't a small show by any means. But like all nerd shows, there's a lot of learnings that happened to that. And I was able to take some of that into Indie Drop-In, which I'm sure we'll get into. But when we decided to quit that, I wanted to focus pretty much 100% on Indie Drop-In and Greg Reviews Sci-Fi. And she started her own channel called Aaron Collects Pez, which I know is, you know, it's one of my style names. It's how I like to market. I basically name everything exactly what it is.
That is your way. It's true.
It is. I think the fancier the name, the worse you're going to do for yourself. It's like the number one thing that content creators fail to do is name their show properly.
I mean, people have to understand what it can't be complicated.
I mean, every once in a while you get a cool name that makes it, but 9 times out of 10, like big YouTube channels are named whatever the creators' names are. They're not named something weird. Podcasting is very similar in that way. You know, the Jordan Harbinger show is one example, right? He could have called it anything he wanted, but he didn't. So yeah, so she's doing that. It's doing really well. She does TikTok, YouTube, and she just is starting to upload video to Spotify. So we're going to test that out a little bit. But yeah, she's been doing that for, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 months now. It's going well.
So you taught her the ins and outs of that, I suppose.
Well, we've been married for a really long time. So she's a graphic designer by trade. So, she knows all this stuff anyway.
Why are you asking me for a graphic design guy then? What the heck, man?
Well, because she's busy.
There you go. I got it. So like I said, family thing, man, is awesome. You actually started doing this together over 2 years ago.
Yep.
Nerd culture show, we'll call it.
Yeah,
I'd love to use that term. And you've rode that out for 2 years, which is actually quite a while for a podcast. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, it didn't fail. That's the interesting thing about it. I mean, I'm sure people out there are like, what do you mean you closed down a show that was monetized and easily making hundreds of dollars an episode? And, you know, why did you close it down? And it really just became work. You know, we started having to watch shows that we just didn't really like and talk about shows we didn't want to watch. And every night we had a list of shows like we had to watch. So like on a Saturday, like we'd have to binge watch Lucifer or whatever, which is great, but it's not great when you have to put in 10 hours of Lucifer in order to talk on your show on Sunday. You know what I mean?
For an hour of content or something. Yeah.
That's exactly right. And, you know, you have to be exact. You have to know all these actors' names and kind of what's going on. You have to, like, you have to understand the timelines of everything, like when stuff is coming out and when stuff's being produced. And nerd culture shows are a lot of work for not a giant audience.
Well, just by the tone of your voice, you can tell that you really feel as if it was just another work day, basically.
Yeah.
A lot more goes into podcasting than just recording, right? And that's an example of something that takes extensive research, work, whatever you want to call it, beforehand.
Yeah. And some cool stuff started happening. You know, like we started getting invites to things and early access to stuff. Like we watched Tenet before anybody had it. You know, we just had you know, free access to different channels and things. So it had a cool factor to it, which I really liked. But, you know, we weren't big enough to where the PR agencies were reaching out to us. You know, they were going on the Nerdist and things like that, not us. But I'll tell you what it did do is it gave me the idea for Indie Drop-In, which I'll be forever grateful for, because I think Indie Drop-In has the opportunity to do more good for podcasters and provide something interesting for me to work on, which is really all I'm interested in, right? Something fun that has some meaningful impact.
Before we get into any podcaster thing, it sounds like what else it kind of did was it helped you hone your craft. It helped you be in a position that you can be in today. So 2 years, you learned a lot over that 2 years. I'm sure you're probably thinking about it now. I see you shaking your head.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll give you a scary stat if you want a scary stat.
All right.
The first year a Fan Dummies was around, I spent $40,000 advertising it.
Mm.
And it got me about to 10,000 downloads an episode. So it was basically a 4-to-1, $4 for every one listener. And it got my advertising skills got considerably better during that very expensive training class.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is another thing I like to talk to podcasters about. Like when you turn off your show, like that money's gone, right? Like you have the skills, yes, but all that effort that you put into it, it just kind of disappears. I mean, selling podcasts.
Yeah. Yeah. You didn't sell it. So it's like an investment that's, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, selling podcasts is really not an indie podcaster thing. I mean, you can be picked up by a network, but when have you ever heard of a show that's like, oh, hey guys, you know, like you, oh, hey guys, I sold Indie Podcaster to Tanner and he's just going to take it from here. People would be like, what? Like,
yeah,
he's great, but you know, I subscribe to you.
Yeah.
It just doesn't really work that well.
And you never expected to be able to sell it and get $40,000 back. That's for dang sure.
No, I mean, it might. I mean, it didn't generate that in ads. And that's how you buy a podcast is by how much money it makes.
Yeah. And we'll get into some of that too. But point being, you learned a lot in those 2 years though. So it wasn't just like you did well at the podcast and you got to really build going into Indie Drop-In. So talk to us more about how it inspired Indie Drop-In, because I'm trying to figure that out right now.
Yeah, no, that's great. So I looked at what the challenges were to getting listeners, right? And my first real epiphany was that when you advertise a show that isn't any good, you're just throwing money down the tubes. So luckily our show progressed into something good quickly, but I advertised way too fast. So that's one kind of thing I learned. How it progressed into Indie Drop-In is the second thing that I realized about the industry, which is when you see these giant networks produce a show, like they'll make a rewatch of The Witcher, let's say, and it'll jump to number 2 or 3 in Apple Podcasts instantly. Well, what are the mechanisms that it took for them to do that? One of them is they feed drop across their entire network of shows. That's one major thing that they do. The second thing is they pepper everything in digital ads. They buy Google ads, Twitter ads, they buy Reddit ads, they buy everything. They buy ads over every podcast app that there is. So I thought to myself, okay, this was while Fan Dummies was still around. What do I need to do to make it so that Fan Dummies has an equal benefit as like Wondery? I said, okay, well, the first thing I need to do is I need to be able to feed drop Fan Dummies on a gigantic show, right? Like I've got to get a huge amount of listeners to hear my show that we spent years, you know, perfecting. Next is I have to make sure that it has ads running everywhere. Like it needs ads running everywhere. But Fan Dummies didn't warrant that investment. Like I tried it. I spent the money, right? The audience really isn't there, I don't think, for what we were trying to do for a lot of reasons, which we'll get into. But when I really started thinking about it, I thought, well, I don't want to spend all this money on Fan Dummies. What I really need to do is I'm going to start a new show that just does feed drops for nerd shows. And then I'll spend a lot of money on that show to get it built up. And then when I drop Fan Dummies in there, they'll hear it. And if they like it, I'll get the right listeners that I want. Like I won't get just random listeners from Google. I'll get the ones that have heard us and like us, right? So It's like a big filter for listeners. But then, you know, like everything, I was like, well, I don't want to start with nerd shows because that's, you know, like where I sleep. So
yeah,
I'm going to start with true crime since I literally know nothing about true crime. And if I mess it up, no one knows me. No one will know I was here. Like I just, you know, kind of swooped in and left.
But you knew one thing about true crime, though. What was that?
That there was enough creators that would submit a show and there's enough listeners that would make it worth advertising. That's why I picked it.
Yep.
And I thought it was very low risk for fan dummies, right? That there's not a lot of overlap. So if for some reason I messed something up, it wouldn't impact my actual show.
Hey, listener, are you a podcaster or content creator? Well, you've got to hear this. I'm going to talk to you about Riverside.fm. I use Riverside to record all my interviews for this podcast. I absolutely love it. Super simple to use, and I get the audio quality of an actual recording studio. You can have video resolution up to 4K, uncompressed crystal clear audio, and continuous file uploading throughout your recording. I've used a lot of different things to record this podcast, and I'll be honest with you, some of them were just way more complicated than they needed to be. That will not be an issue with Riverside FM. It is super simple, and with that, you still have the quality audio, which is very critical. The support team is great and always available to assist you with any questions that you may have. Damn it, I'm serious when I say this. Riverside FM is the ultimate great recording solution for podcasters and content creators. Go online right now and check it out. You can do a free trial and give it a shot. I guarantee afterwards you will be so happy with it. You'll be looking through all the different packages and you will find one that meets your needs. Legitimize the content you are recording and creating. Go to riverside.fm right now to get started.
I launched the true crime show with about $5,000 in ads, which I had honed my techniques poorly with the last show, and got about 10,000 or so listeners right away, like almost immediately across maybe like 3 months. And I was like, okay, well, this show is now something and people are getting conversions and it's a good idea. I've proof cased my idea. So, you know, let's turn it into something good. Let's turn it into a business. Let's turn it into a network. Let's turn it into something I can do for more than just true crime podcasters.
When did you launch the true crime?
It's a great question. I'm pretty sure it was like in May of 2020. So it's not quite 2 years old, but it's coming up on 2 years old. And then I launched comedy shortly after that, maybe 6 months. So it took me 6 months to really decide, yes, this is something I want to do for all podcasters eventually. The business model makes sense. I can provide a value at no cost to the podcaster because I was an indie podcaster. So I get that probably doing it as a side gig, you not want to spend a bunch of money on it. You don't even know if it's going to work. So I thought it was very, very important for me to not charge the creators anything. Like that is a key component in the strategy. And then I thought, well, if I'm going to spend a bunch of money on ads, I got to figure out some way to generate money. So what I'll do is I'll insert my own ads into their feed drops, generate some money for Indie Drop-In, which I'll then spend on ads. And so far, that's working pretty good.
And you continue to do so. You're not just like taking this all in and just saving it all.
No. Someday, I do hope Indie Drop-In will pay me something. I really do. That is the goal. But so far, I spend more than it makes.
I'm not going to throw out numbers, but it makes a decent amount too.
Yeah.
You're really treating this like a business and you're investing a lot into it.
Well, I also take my responsibility to these creators pretty seriously. I mean, the bargain that we strike is that if they let me use their content, which they officially license their episode to me. So there's a license agreement when they submit their show. They officially license the use of their hard work. And for that, I'm going to make every effort to get them listeners. That's the bargain. And I take it really seriously. It takes a lot of effort to make these shows. There's a lot of love and passion and these people's personalities in these shows. And I want to treat them with that level of respect.
And it's a good opportunity because the audience, the listeners are already there. So really, they get to get their product, their podcast out in front of somebody who is interested in, let's say, true crime, for example, not just something random. So it is a little bit more targeted right off the bat. That's one of the advantages. You're getting targeted listener potential.
Yeah. And I really call it the great filter. And it hurts my feelings a little bit. I'll tell you, it's a double-edged sword, because the great filter is the fact that I can collect listeners that are interested in true crime, but they may or may not be interested in that person who is being featured that week for whatever reason. And I have for sure converted thousands of listeners to some shows and zero to others, which I'm working very hard to try to understand why that happens and what kind of shows I should feature to where that's more consistent.
You're not the biggest true crime guy beforehand, so it's kind of been a learning experience for you as you've gone along as well, huh? For that genre, that is.
Yeah, I mean, it is, but podcasting is really podcasting. And I feel like, I'll tell you, there's a couple common things. There's also a couple uncommon things. So along that same lines, yes, I've listened to so much true crime that I can't even describe how much true crime that I currently listen to. I mean, we get 5 or 6 submissions a week. I have to listen to those shows, at least skim through them, make sure they're not way out in left field, make sure the audio quality is great, make sure they're not, you know, saying weird things that'll get my show taken off the air. You know, I got to try to like make sure. So I can't just not listen to them. I have to at least kind of buzz through them a little bit. But there are certain types of true crime that people that listen to my show absolutely hate. And one of them is plane related true crime. So
you're talking airplanes?
Yes. Huh. Every single episode that has to do anything with an airplane gets 20% or 30% lower listens.
I love airplanes. I'm a big air crash investigators guy. What else doesn't do well?
Cults. Cults almost never do well. Now, there are exceptions when the show is focused only on cults. I think some people go, oh, I'm into cults, and this show is 100% about cults. It's a cult niche. Maybe I'll go there. But the show itself gets less listens, but might get more conversions. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, because it's so niche, we got a lot of people clicking the links. We got a lot of people moving over to their show. But my numbers on that show are down.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Let's get back to the feed drop in true crime. You found success there. You did not find as much success in other genres, though.
Well, it just depends on what you consider success, really. You know, our other show, Comedy, does about 1,000 downloads an episode.
Which is a lot more than a lot of other people's comedy indie podcasts, yeah.
Yeah, and the normal comedy show that we gets 50 downloads per episode, right? The normal podcaster that submits. So it's 10x more, at least, listeners than they were accustomed to getting. So in those two genres, in both the scary and paranormal and then comedy, they're a lot lower listens, but they're also a lot bigger than what an average show would be. They're both, you know, Scary Time gets, I think it's going to do 8,000 downloads this week, or 8,000 downloads this month, which is about 2,000 downloads a week. So, you know, and it just depends. It takes about 5 weeks for a show to hit 1,000 downloads in Scary Time, which is a little bit longer than I'd like. I want it to be 1,000 downloads in 30 days. But those shows are growing. I'm spending a lot of money on those two shows. You know, just in Google Ads alone, I spend $500 a month for each show, just in Google Ads. Plus, I do all sorts of other ads too, like Twitter ads and Facebook ads. And
are you at a point where you're keeping like your what's coming in from like true crime to true crime? Or you just kind of have like the big pot that you distribute?
What do you mean?
Are you like picking all the money from a certain thing back into it? Or you just kind of have overall amount you're distributing?
I see.
Yeah, are you a socialist, Greg? That's what I'm asking.
Yeah. So sort of. Indie Drop-In is a single business. So I don't isolate the earnings between the shows. I kind of feed the show that's hungry, if that makes a difference.
Yeah.
If that's a good way to say it. Both Comedy and Scary Time do generate revenue for sure. They each generate hundreds of dollars a month, but True Crime generates thousands of dollars a month. So right now, Comedy and Scary Time spend true crime's money, if that's the way you want to look at it.
Yeah. This is an interesting conversation because you are doing it like you and I are opposite on how we're making money. Mm-hmm. You are using ads that inserted dynamically ads, right?
Yeah, I use a combination for sure. So all of my shows have 7 ad slots. So they have 2 pre's, 3 mids, and 2 posts. And they're always filled with dynamic ads. But when I get host read ads, I replace them because they make more money. And lately, true crime has had some decent host read ads coming in. So I never add slots because, you know, I have to cater to the audience and I have to, you know, I want to get referrals. I don't want to just load up on ads. But over time, I've learned that the 7 ad mark for an hour show is palatable by the listener. The show grows. It grows 10 to 12% month over month. So, you know, if nobody's complaining and the show is growing, I'm going to consider that happy listeners.
Yeah. You have the dynamic aspect, whereas I'm just like host read / working straight with every sponsor wanting to advertise, vice versa, you know, whatever you want to word it. I'm working directly with them and they all relate to, completely relate directly to the things that this podcast is about.
Yeah, you're going the traditional model, which you have a niche show, so you will likely make way more money. If we had equal downloads, I think you would make way more money. So,
right.
You know, because your listeners are highly targeted to podcasting. So when you advertise things like Riverside or Indie Drop-In or Captivate or whatever, Podpage or whatever it is, everyone listening is a potential customer. Where when I'm doing advertising for true crime, I have to show the demographics. It's 75% high earning college educated females. That's what my demographics are. So I have to pitch that to the advertisers and convince them that I have an audience that would likely buy whatever it is that they're selling.
Have you on here, not only because you sponsor this podcast, you're my good friend. You in this conversation is like valuable information, right? We're talking about ads right now. Yep. We're kind of doing a quick run through of Indie Drop-In, which I think everybody can kind of understand the basic concept of what's going on with it.
Yeah, I hope so.
But I don't think that everybody listening probably understands much beyond the basic concept of these ads that we're talking about.
Sure.
You say it's a fair statement, which it's kind of like an area that's not a lot of indie podcasters are comfortable with.
And I don't know if they really should get too comfortable yet, right? Because dynamic ads are very low cost, right? So you have to have lots and lots of listeners to make any money at all. So you're almost always better off being ad-free, at least until you're 500 to 1,000 downloads an episode. Because let's just say the going rate for 1,000 downloads is $4. Like, are you really going to subject your listener to an ad for $2.50? Probably not. At that point, you know, you have to really think about, is it worth it when I'm in the audience building phase, right? When you don't really know if your show is any good yet, which is tough to know. But for the audience listening, what a dynamic ad is essentially I subscribe to a service where I put markers in my audio and they insert ads. When you listen to a podcast and you hear an ad for like the local Ford dealer, that is dynamically inserted and targeted to your city or your area, most likely. And those are the kind of ads that I use to fill my unused slots. So host read ads are absolutely number one. They're the highest paying, but second highest paying are dynamic ads. And then if for some reason dynamic ad fill is down, which it is down right now because it's January and most budgets are spent in December, then I might add in ads for my own stuff. So you might hear a Scary Time ad on True Crime, or you might hear a True Crime ad on Scary Time.
You might hear a comedy ad on True Crime, right?
You know, it's unbelievable how many conversions I get to comedy from True Crime. I don't know if people are just like, I need a palate cleanser.
Yeah.
They're like, I cannot hear another depressing episode. You know, tell me a joke.
All the podcasters listening are going to be like, screw you, Greg. I'm ready to make money, baby.
Woo. Oh, yeah.
I'm ready to make money.
I hope they are.
Well, I mean, but here's the thing where most people can't ever even picture or find themselves at a point where they're willing to spend money to grow their show.
Yeah.
That's a whole different thing.
Well, I can tell you when it's probably a good time to spend money if that will help based on my experience.
Yeah, because you did it all in the beginning, right? I mean, you wouldn't do that again.
It was wrong, man. It was like lighting money on fire and throwing it out the window because I'd been a YouTube and content creator and a blogger previous to starting Fan Dummies. So, you know, I made, like a lot of people, a rash assumption that the same old thing would work, right? And it didn't really. I mean, what happened is I got a lot of listens up front and then they left.
Because you weren't any good?
I wasn't any good. The show was terrible. I was using, you know, $10 microphones. I had a Rodecaster, but I was using Rode pod mics, which are these. I mean, you can't see them, but I'll show them to you, Jeff, so you can see. You know, I was using those up until last week, but they weren't made yet. They were coming out. So I started my podcast with like, I don't know, $10 microphones, SM58 clones, you know, like audio quality was bad. I didn't know how to create segments. I didn't know how to keep the listener interested for 45 minutes. My listen time was low. I was getting abandons in the first 60 seconds. They weren't making it past our mid-roll. I was at probably 45% audience retention by the end of the show, which is no way to grow a show. So what happened is, you know, when you spend money, your focus shifts a little bit. You start saying, okay, there's real stakes here, and I need to figure out what's broken. Like if your car's broken down, and you can't get to work, you're real serious about finding out what's wrong with your car. You're real serious about that.
Yeah.
And that's how I think I treated podcasting and podcast ads. So what happened is I started focusing on audience retention, which I am convinced is the key metric to podcast growth. Nothing else matters. At least it doesn't to me. And what I found was, is when I can get my audience retention above 65%, 70%, my show grows on its own. People like it and they talk to people about it. It's always a big joke like, oh, word of mouth is the way to grow your show. Well, how do I can't like compel people to tell other people about my show. You know, what can I possibly do with word of mouth? I'll tell you what to do. Get your retention above 70%. If you can do that, your show will grow organically because it's good. And if half the people who listen to your show hang up before it's over, your show sucks. It's no good. And I see that in indie drop-in. I look at my retention across episodes and, you know, I had a show with 100% retention. I had a guy, Obscure History, submitted a show for true crime. I forget the name of it. It was about American serial killer. And the sucker did 14,000 downloads and 100% retention on both Apple and Spotify.
It's a good podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of the only shows. There have been other ones to get in the high 90s, but I've never seen one be 100 and on both platforms, which is really incredible. You can go down my retention list and all of the ones that are above 70, if I send a little Twitter message to the creator and go, hey, how's your retention? They always have some wild story like, oh my God, you doubled my listens. Like I had 500, now I have 1,000, or I had 200 and now I have 2,000 or something. Like I think I heard Gary mention something similar on your show, right? That,
yeah,
you know, it makes a huge impact. And, you know, I encourage anybody to listen to that episode from yours because still is a good show. And it has high retention on my platform and it got very good referrals. So, you know, the retention to me is the absolute most important thing you can do. You shouldn't do anything else other than that. Like that should be your one metric. And when you hit 70%, buy ads. You have a spark. It needs fuel.
You have probably heard of promo swaps with other podcasters, but have you heard of feed drops? Feed drops are when one podcaster plays an entire episode of another podcast. The idea is for the listeners of the show to experience an entire episode before they decide if they want to subscribe. I'm going to tell you what, this is way more effective than promo swaps, and I have the perfect person that can do this for you, my good friend Greg at Indie Drop-In Network. Indie Drop-In Network is a network built around feed drops. You submit an episode, and if approved, it appears on one of Indie Drop-In's shows with all your contact details in front of established audience. Best of all, it's free. So if you are a true crime, paranormal, scary, or comedy podcaster looking to find new listeners, consider doing this.
I've done it and I can tell you it does work. What the hell are you waiting for? I should probably tell you how to do it. Maybe that's what you're waiting for. Go to indiedropin.com/creators. I'll say it again. Go to indiedropin.com/creators. You're damn right. Dang, that felt good. So that's a great point. So we're going to say 70%. It sounds very fair and reasonable, but here's the part that people don't always see as reasonable, actually spending money on ads. So let's just try to think of a reasonable number, because I think there are reasonable numbers that people could use, right?
Yeah.
So let's just walk through a scenario where over a 90-day period or something, I'm going to spend $500.
Okay.
$500, let's say. That's reasonable, maybe not for everybody, but if you have a podcast that's getting a decent amount of downloads, you're getting that retention rate, and you wanted to save up $500 to spend, what'd be a good approach in your opinion?
Are you ever going to spend any other money, or is this $500 kind of like the Hail Mary?
This $500, it's kind of a Hail Mary in the sense that I need it to go well for me to continue to spend more down the road. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. So let me give you a couple of things you can do that are not gambling, that are 100% effective. So you can buy in-app ads that are nearly 100% effective. So if you buy an Overcast ad, which are now, it's now very hard to buy one for under $500. But if you bought an Overcast ad and it says you're going to get 70 subscribers, you're going to get 70 in almost every case, right? Podcast Addict has that. Podcast Republic has that. There's a number of them. Castos, there's a bunch of them. And that's the for sure bet. You know, if you're going to throw a Hail Mary, I would say you shouldn't spend the $500.
Let me ask you this, Greg. When you're saying ads on these apps, what do you mean by that exactly?
Yeah. So let's just take Overcast as an example because it's the most well-known, but there are other apps that do it. When you go to Overcast FM, I think you go to you can click ads in there on their website. You put in your podcast and you can pick, like if you want to run an ad on true crime, you want to run an ad in comedy, that you can buy an ad in the category. And what happens is it puts your podcast at the top of the list in that category. And it says featured and, you know, it complies with all the, you know, US and legal ramifications and all that, but it puts it at the top of the list and people click it. And it just shows how being at the top of a search result list is powerful, right? Because that's all it does on Overcast. It just floats you to the top and you get 70 subs out of it.
I wanted to make sure to bring that up because it's not just like them damn ads that pop up on my kids' games that they play on my phone.
No.
When we're talking ads, that's a lot of different meanings to it. And in this case, it's like a featured spot, for example, like you're saying.
Exactly. So if you're listening to this in the next 2 months and you go to podcastrepublic.fm.net, I don't know what it is, but you go to Podcast Republic, you'll see true crime is right on the front, right? That is a featured slot that I have purchased on that app and website. And by the way, that's $400 a month for anybody listening. People loan me their content. It's the least I can do to tell them what I'm spending. And that's maybe the best deal on the internet right now. But those slots, like I'm never giving that up. You know, you have to pry that slot out of my cold, dead hands. And that's how a lot of people are. Like I've waited a year to get that slot. But there are slots there that are coming up all the time that are like $100 and $200. So if I had $500, I would probably buy an Overcast ad or a Podcast Addict ad and a Podcast Republic ad. You know, I would figure out a way where I could buy two ads. And you might have to skip Overcast for that. But you would get a featured slot on two apps where you know everyone looking at the app is interested in podcasts. You know it's going to be in your category, right? So it's like a feed drop, except it's just an ad, right? It's just your show filtered to the top of the category. So it's kind of what I do in a way.
Yeah.
You know, we pinpoint the listener, pinpoint the category, and then encourage the listener to click on the creator, really.
And PodSpike, who sponsors this podcast, we have this workout agreement here where they're doing some of that stuff. I'm on the Podcast Guru.
Yeah, Podcast Guru. There's another one.
And it took like the first week. I was like, I'm just not seeing anything. But since then, I'm starting to see them come in on it.
Yeah.
And in that case, it could be as simple as like every time they get on their app, they might choose to ignore it for several times, right?
Exactly.
They might see my podcast and might say, I'm going to go find what I want to listen to. But when it continues to be there, because most people are probably going to listen every day to something,
mm-hmm.
it's there. And what you really want is that one time they're going to click on it, that's your opportunity to try to make it where they're going to continue to listen to your podcast moving forward.
Yeah. Now, there also is an alternate strategy that I definitely want to talk about really quick. And let's say you have $150 a month. Like, you can just set aside $150 a month forever.
That's reasonable for a lot of people, yeah.
Right?
If they just think about it, what they're spending $150 on elsewhere, right? If you're just hanging out with your friends or whatever, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But if you want to really look into your finance and figure out how to get $150 a month.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm setting the stage for you, Greg.
No, that's perfect. It's perfect. I think, $150 is impossible for some people. But if you can do it, what I would do is I would craft your skills at running Google, Twitter, or Facebook ads. There's a lot of heat in the podcasting space about how those ads don't work. I promise you they work. They absolutely work. But it's not for the faint of heart. It's a skill. You have to write the right copy. You have to use the right images. You have to make videos. You have to make images of all different sizes. You have to make alternate images. You have to really spend a lot of effort maximizing your $150. So the first month, if you feel like you're going to just put it on there and get, 150 listeners, you're not. You're going to have to really work at it. And it took me a very, very long time. But now on about, my clicks, my cost per click is down around 10 cents, which took me at least 6 months to get there. And I've filtered out all of the clicks I don't want. So believe it or not, when someone searches for best podcast, I don't want my ad to come up. I want my ad to come up when someone searches best true crime podcast or true crime podcast in Minnesota or, true crime podcast by a girl or true crime podcast by a team, right? Like, I want keywords where I can highly target a show that this Googler is looking for.
Makes sense once you kind of understand it a little bit.
That's what I'm saying.
You got to learn as you go.
Yeah. And learning's expensive. School's expensive, yep. But learning with money is also very expensive.
Yeah. Can't argue with that one.
Yeah.
Tanner, you, me, we kind of teaming up here to really try to do some good things for the indie podcaster community. Yeah. We talked about Podcast Garage. We're trying to get that rolling. What are some other things in the last couple of minutes here you can think of that you'd like to talk about? I got you on the spot. You're a good resource, man. I just want to utilize the time well.
Yeah, no, it's perfectly fine. And, I'm happy to talk again or longer. But the biggest thing I would say is I'm going to launch 4 shows this year, 4 additional shows, which will double the shows Indie Droppin' has. And I know last year I was promising that I was going to do this, but I was really trying to find the method to the madness, right? I wanted to make sure that I could convert people to comedy shows and paranormal shows. And I think I've proven that. And I'm happy enough to move forward to, I'm going to tackle the TV movie category next.
That's a huge one.
I'm finally going to get to the category I wanted to start on 2 years into Indie Droppin's life. But, I can announce them here. It's going to be a series called the Fanatic Series. And it's going to be science fiction fanatic, horror fanatic, fantasy fanatic, and one I haven't figured out yet. So anybody on your show that wants to make a comment on Twitter, feel free to comment. But how I'm going to tackle this genre is I'm going to allow any show that's talking about fantasy or TV, horror or science fiction, even if they don't talk about science fiction normally, if they cover a science fiction movie or a science fiction show, or they want to talk about the fandom of science fiction or anything like that, it'll open it up to, people who cover Harry Potter, for instance. They can submit to fantasy, even though it's not a Harry Potter show. It's a way I can be super inclusive while still being able to target a niche and be able to serve a niche that I can actually advertise to.
And if you're listening and you like the way that sounds, it's really not, there's no risk in it. There's no reason not to do it. And you've been spending the majority of this episode explaining how you're investing into this business and how it's beneficial to indie podcasters. And so you're safe to know that you're doing everything on your end too.
Yeah, and I'm trying to get it to a point where people feel comfortable enough with Indie Drop-In that they submit their own episodes, right? Today, I probably get half of my episodes or more by me curating them. I listen to episodes and I reach out and I try to really drum up some of these episodes. But I really want indie podcasters to feel comfortable just to submit it. I might decline it, right? I mean, sometimes you might not quite be ready. Like you might not, like the spark might not be sparking, right? It'll do you no good to expose your show to 1,000 listeners if your show is not edited, you know, your audio quality isn't right, you have no call to actions, like you don't say your name when the show opens, right? You have no idea what show this is. You know, so there's all sorts of these little things that I look at to make sure that if someone listens to your show for the very first time after never hearing your name, don't have any idea who you are, that they can go, oh, that's Jeff, the podcast father. This show is about podcasting and I'm going to hear stories from podcasters, how they came into the hobby, how they turned it into a business, how they turned it into a top 5 Apple podcast, whatever, you know, like I hear all the big ones that you have on, don't worry. Right. Like these things you have to tell the listener, they do not know it.
Right.
If you get declined, just know that I'm going to send you like a really nice email and I'm going to say, hey, here are some things I would work on. I will absolutely feature you once you get to this level. So, and if you want to work with me, DM me on Twitter and I'll help you through it the whole way. Right. So, my ultimate goal is to have you ready to be featured. It doesn't do me any good if you're not ready.
And in the meantime, it's important to mention also that you're available to help even if they're not submitting, right?
I'll do the best that I can. I really like to participate in the community. I think that's the whole reason why we're starting Podcast Garage. And then I have my show Podcast Creators, which I do infrequently when I have a podcaster that kind of went through the school of hard knocks and can teach us something. I have that, you know, I have a how show, but I think Podcast Garage is going to be our first endeavor where we get a podcaster on the other end and we hear the stuff that they're working on and we help them work through, you know, things they may not have ever thought of. And I don't promise that we have all the answers. We're definitely not gurus, but, you know, we have some collective knowledge that we've learned, at least me, I know you too, have learned the very hardest way possible. We have learned it the hardest way. Like, there's no harder way to learn it. It was expensive of time and money and effort and years of effort. So hopefully it turns out good.
And we all bring something different to the table too. I think that's one of the special things about it. The couple recordings we did do were, they seemed like a value added task, put it that way.
Yeah. And I feel kind of bad. You know, every show out there is just advice, right? Like there's no shortage of advice.
Right.
But it's general advice. It's like, oh, how do you promote your show on TikTok? Well,
dance, baby.
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot different for a true crime show than it is for a comedy skit show.
Yeah. I want to give you a second to tell everybody where to find all your stuff. Like I said, I really appreciate you coming on, but I want to make sure everybody can get their, well, I would say get their pen and paper out, right? But they don't need to do that because it's in the show notes. But it sounds dramatic saying that. I'm a dramatic guy, Greg.
Get your pen out quickly.
Which is funny because they actually, the couple recordings that we have done, they're doing that the whole time. I don't know if you picked up on that. They're like, oh, hold on. Like when we're doing the Podcast Garage, they're like, hold on a second. They just start writing it down. It's amazing. I love it.
Or it's like typing on the keyboard, like what are you doing? I'm Googling what you're telling me to. Like, oh my God. Like, just take a note, man. Take a note. You can find me on indiedropin.com. You also hear Jeff talk about Indie Drop-In and just about every one of his shows, which I really appreciate the opportunity to sponsor your show, Jeff. I think it speaks exactly to what I'm trying to do in the community, right? It's a way I can take the money that I make and spend it in the community that it serves, right? So you've done great work for IndieDropIn.com and I really appreciate it. And if you're a true crime person or you're a paranormal show or you're a comedy, just go to indiedropin.com/creators. There's a little form you fill out. It's real easy. And upload your audio, sign the licensing agreement. Basically, it's a checkbox. And if I accept it, then you'll be on the show. and I'll record a cool little intro where I tell people who you are and what your show's about and why they would like it. And then I play it and hopefully people love you. That's the goal anyway.
Don't be like me and upload the wrong audio though.
Oh, no. Don't be like Jeff. I mean, the form is literally so simple and he messed it up.
I don't even know what I uploaded, but it sure as hell wasn't a true crime. Yeah, do a true crime.
But your episode is a good example, right? It got huge listens, but not a lot of referrals, right? Because they said, okay, well, I love this content, you know, but I'm into true crime, not podcasts. So it's just one of those interesting things that you work through.
It probably helped the true crime aspect person of it, though.
Oh, yeah. I bet you that he got lots of referrals. He's probably like, what is going on here? Where did these 1,000 people come from?
Man, I appreciate you taking the time to have this conversation with me this evening, and I appreciate everything you do, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Old Greg, have a good evening.
See you later.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for telling a friend. But more importantly, thank you for supporting independent content creators. I hope you enjoyed this episode and continue to listen to the upcoming ones. I'm really trying to do something special here by highlighting all the amazing things all these amazing content creators are doing. I hope you continue to join me on my journey. I'm Jeff, aka Podcast Father, the Indie Podcaster. Keep being you, keep being great.